Welcome back to another episode of The Agent's Angle. I'm Jonathan Booker.
And I'm Peter Paleologos.
And we're thrilled to have you join us as we dive deep into the world of football agency. So whether you're a devoted football fan or a curious mind looking to explore the agent's perspective, we're glad to have you with us.
In this episode of The Agent's Angle, we'll be taking a look at the impact and the influence that agents are increasingly having in the women's game, as well as an interview with a former professional player and now leading agent from the world of women's football.
All that to come on The Agent's Angle.
It's Women's World Cup here in Australia and New Zealand, of course, Jonathan. I think this episode has come at the right time to talk about women players, women agents, and just the whole transfer system around women's football. There's real an exciting vibe here in Australia. I'm hoping it's resonating to all other countries. The whole country's behind, obviously, a national team, the Matildas, but it's all about all the players. And a lot of the players are really showing a lot of talent. I'm really glad to see so many different players from South Africa, Morocco, from Jamaica, even from Haiti, really doing well and getting a bit of a landscape where they can show their talents. And I've also sensed there's a lot of agents and scouts that have come to this World Cup to scout some of the players. And that's really exciting, not just for the agency space, but for the players themselves, because it's all about pathways. And I'm hoping from that there'd be more impact in terms of the transfer window. I know we're in the transfer window at the moment for both women's and men's, and we'll talk a little bit about the transfer window and all the some of the big transfers that have happened over time in women's football. But really, it's about finally women getting that recognition in working conditions, in employment opportunities, and in pathways.
Absolutely, Peter. The Women's World Cup has been fantastic, and it continues to be fantastic. Now, I've been keeping an eye on the transfer window. Now, although we proactively try not to get bogged down in speculation, as we know from working in the football agent world, that a lot of what is published and broadcast is pure speculation and misinformation for whatever reason. But the particular thing that has caught my eye in light of the Women's World Cup is the contrast between the transfers, releases and loans in the men's game and the women's game. Obviously, there is an offset between the two transfer windows at the moment, with the women's window closing roughly 2 weeks later than the men's in a lot of cases. And that is probably a sensible move due to the World Cup.
Yes.
And players should quite rightly be focused on the tournament itself. I appreciate the dynamics are different for the men's and women's game at the moment, not least the size of the transfer markets. And thus far in this window, two things that really stand out for me are one, the number of undisclosed fees in the women's game, even more so than the men's game, it would seem, which was something we touched upon in a previous episode, the aspects of transparency when we interviewed Colin Gordon. But also, there are no big value transfers in the women's transfer window just yet. And that's according to the Guardian newspaper in the UK. And this is solely involving teams in arguably the top five or six European leagues. Now, the figures I have are correct at the time of recording, but these are likely to be changing actually as we speak. There's been 405 deals and no fees declared thus far in the women's summer transfer window in these major European leagues. And that's compared to 914 deals totaling £3.5 billion in the men's window thus far. Now, the question I've got to ask, is this the calm before the storm, I wonder, for transfers in this women's summer transfer window? With records set in 2022, last year, and Kira Walsh going to Barcelona. And in this year's January window, not long ago, there was a lot of speculation of big bids had not been accepted. And it's likely that record would have been broken again if they were accepted. So do you think it'll go all a bit manic once all the excitement down under calms with the Women's World Cup and it draws to a close in approximately a week after this episode of The Agent's Angle is due to be broadcast? And then we see the elite women players can start to look at moves and contract extensions and their agents start to put the finishing touches to transactions that they have probably been working on for weeks, if not months.
I think it is the calm before the storm, but I think it's going to launch. I get the sense a lot of agencies, established agencies have got women's departments or looking at women's football, and they are seeking not only to represent women, but looking for better opportunities. I see a trend where a lot of clubs are offering better pay, more professionalism, the leagues are expanding, and so there's more pathways there. And also I see a lot of female agents emerging. And that's great to see, because we want to see more female agents, not just in the women's football space, but in the men's football space.
Absolutely.
I did see an interesting figure in terms of Sweden, where the exam there, the recent exam in April, it was a pass rate of about 35%, which is below the 52% FIFA average. But out of the candidates who sat that exam, only two women agents got through. So that's a little bit concerning, as we want to see a lot more women agents, and we will. Because this World Cup, for me, is a launching pad to take the women's game and the aspirations of players to a much higher level. But just talking about agents, because that's what we're about, the agents angle. Agents working in women's football can influence players' careers, because we negotiate the contracts, the transfer fees, the conditions, but also endorsement and sponsorship. And I think that is a very important space, because a lot of the products, and I've seen it here in the World Cup with a lot of the advertisement, mainly around the Matildas being the Australian national women's team, a lot of sponsorship coming in, a lot of brands coming in. And in the women's space, a lot of brands see those type of consumers in those type of products as very aspirational. So I think that's going to really help women's football. But also as agents, we need to protect our clients. A lot of women players need better protection, and legal and personal matters need to be taken care of by agents. An interesting trend that a lot of female football agents, including our guests today, are making a difference to the industry. I want to focus on three from three different parts of the world. Firstly, Samira Sami, who is born in Tehran, Iran, working in the German Bundesliga. And she's making a big impression in that league, which is one of the big five leagues in Europe. Secondly, we've got Jennifer Mendelewicz from France, who's not only, I would say, speaking up for players, but also one of those agents who's fighting to maintain the financial freedom that agents as well as players require from FIFA. And finally, probably one of the biggest agencies in the world, Wasserman. A lot of people in the agency space know that firm. They're quite big in the US and, of course, in your part of the world, Jonathan, in England. The managing partner is Elizabeth Lindsay, based in the USA, and she represents more than half of the United States women's national team. There's so much talent coming out of there. So I think with Elizabeth Lindsay, she's going to have a big impact going forward. And this leads us quite nicely, Jonathan, to investigate some of those issues and others with someone who knows women's football and the aspect of the agency industry far better than us.
And anyone would actually think we plan these shows, Peter.
We plan and we don't plan. There's a bit of off the cuff, there's a bit of everything. This guest, I was really looking forward to bringing her on, not just because the Women's World Cup is on, but really Maria is a really passionate agent and really knows her stuff. So we had a chat with Maria Carlson Di Cecco. She's based in Sweden and Italy. And we asked her on her experiences of the football agency world, both as a player, she was a former player, played for a lot of clubs, and as an agent, as well as other matters, including agent regulation, or the FFAR, I did say that word again, and the future of women's football. Now it's the perfect time to discuss the matter of agents, and in particular in relation to the women's game. We've got a guest, someone who's got a lot of experience as a player and now as an agent in the women's game. Her name, and I'll pronounce this in full, Maria Carlson Di Cecco. And Maria's from the agency CMG. She's CEO, agent and partner. It's a global football agency that represents top players and coaches in the world of women's football. Previously, she was 15 years as a professional football player in Sweden, England, Italy, and France. In terms of her agency, CMG's vision is about creating a world that is conscious, empowered, and equal, where top players and coaches in the world of women's football have world-class opportunities to be the best they can be in order to inspire the next generation. Maria, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Peter.
It's actually an apt time. We've got the Women's World Cup right on now here in Australia. I'm based in Australia, in Melbourne, as most of our listeners know, and New Zealand as well as a co-host. It's been a fantastic tournament so far. A lot of excitement, a lot of fans, a lot of attention, a lot of new players coming to the fore. What's your view on the Women's World Cup right now? It's an exciting time. Any observations or reflections on it?
Yeah, many of them. And I think exactly as you said, it's exciting. And it's the first time we have a World Cup with 32 teams. And a lot of people thought that it's maybe too early for 32 teams, like how will the results be and so on. And yesterday the tournament ended its group stage, and we've seen fantastic games. We've seen even results. We've seen a lot of upcoming national teams showing the leading national teams in the world that they can count on them. Like there's a huge development of the female game around the world, not only in Europe or in the US, but we can also see Asian national teams. We can see African national teams that are doing so well. And I think that what I've been taking from this group stage as the main thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of scouts in women's football, and in particular agents, be very interesting, especially some of these South Africa, Jamaica, even South Korea played very well, Morocco. We've got quite a few nations that have done very well, and Colombia as well, a lot of talent there. Can you just tell us a little bit about your experience of agents from your time as a player when you were playing professionally and how the agent space was back then in women's football?
Yeah, so I did play 9 years professionally in Sweden. That was at that time in the beginning of 2000. It was from a lot of people seen as the best, one of the best leagues in the world. I did not have an agent at that time. My first contact with an agent was 2011, the same year as Women's Super League started to be, it became a semi-professional league for the first time. And I became the first Swede to play in the league. And I had an agent who helped me over there, negotiated my contract, and just looked over mainly these things regarding the contract. This person was actually my assistant coach when I did play in Sweden. And he did also follow me when I moved to Italy and to France. So I had help from an agent when I moved abroad, never in Sweden.
Maria, taking that into account, how does the agent world differ from your perspective for female players now to when you were a player? How is, like, obviously the game's advanced massively on the commercial aspect, and we're seeing it grow more and more now. But from an agent perspective, how does the agent world differ now?
But I would say, like, the contracts, they look totally different now compared to 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It was the clubs, organizations are more developed. Everything is different. There's, of course, better conditions for the players and coaches, like when we look at the financial terms. I can just see when CMG was founded. CMG started 2015. And we negotiated contracts that was around 20,000 euros per year. And there was also, maybe we were asking for a bike for our client so she could go to and from the practice. So it was on that level. And now we do speak directly to the directors at the top clubs that have the mandate to actually take a decision. It's not that we need to talk to 1, 2, 3, 4 different people before we can actually get a response. So it's a huge difference. And as you both know, like this industry or this job, people think that there's so much like glamour around it. And I think we do work in a world where that has been like fighting for decades. For centuries, it was actually, you know, women's football was huge in the end of the, like 100 years ago. There were like sold out stadiums in England, for example. And then the sport was just banned for 40, 50 years in many parts of the world.
I think that's the thing that not many people know, that it was banned in certain parts of the world and parts of the world where people would be surprised that it was banned.
Exactly. And Brazil is one example. 40 years ago, like 82, women were actually allowed to play again. That's only 40 years ago. And that, you know, gives a little bit of perspective about it all, I believe. And when I'm talking for CMG, like we did enter in this industry because we do want to be a part of making change for the individual player or coach, but for the whole movement. And the financial part is, of course, a very important part with employment contracts, commercial contracts, transfer fees. That is, of course, crucial, like broadcasting deals. There are so many things that are like fundamental to make a movement go forward. But I think that's why you can see so many players in the past, but also now fighting so much to make this sport grow, which is fantastic.
When did you decide to become an agent and what prompted it and how did you start down that path?
I heard a great interview with Marta now after her last game, talking about how she didn't have any female footballers as role models when she was young. And it was the same for me. So it was always the men's football that was the what I looked up to. Then I started to watch some like female football. You were actually able to see some football in Sweden. We were pretty early. And it's the same with the agents. Since they didn't exist when I was young, when I started to play professional, they almost didn't exist. It has never been a dream for me to become an agent. Never. It was actually just a pure coincidence. You say it like that. It was my former assistant coach. He told me, like, Maria, I think you could be a great agent. I think you should go that way. And I was like, but do they really exist? You know what I mean? So then 2016, when I ended my career, the year before, I started to just work close to him to understand how does this industry work. And then from there, summer 2016, when I ended my professional career, I've been working fully with this. So it's been just like coincidences, I would say. And now I love my work. It's fantastic. And for many reasons.
You're obviously very passionate about the game and the care for the players and for the game. So it seems that that coincidence and that bit of guidance has turned out quite nicely. Now I'm going to change it just slightly. Now, I know Rachel Anderson quite well, and she's recognised as one of the first female licensed football agents, if not the first. And Rachel, going back, has told me some very startling stories of bias and misogyny towards being a female agent. Not least her being ejected from a player awards evening because it was men only at the time. But some 10 to 20 years on, sorry, Rachel, if you're listening, we would hope that we live in slightly more tolerant and unbiased footballing world, but it is still predominantly male-dominated industry. Do you still encounter those attitudes that we would consider outdated, and how do you deal with them?
I would say that most of my time, you know, I just meet very positive responses, respectful meetings with people, because we do work within women's football. We do not work within men's football. We have our industry, like where we work, has a very bad reputation from the men's game. That's a problem for us, because people think that I, as an agent, CMG as an agency, that we are, we behave exactly as bad agents in men's football. That's a problem. But I wouldn't say that, like in generally in my daily work, I meet people that are looking disrespectful on women's football. And that's probably because I only work with people that work within women's football. But then, like, we can take one example as the new FIFA regulations, for example. Women's football were never taken into consideration and listened to when the regulation was drafted some years ago. So that's, of course, that's discrimination towards our sport. But I would say there's so many like positive waves now. There's so many people that are also changing attitude to the better. I just prefer to speak more about that, because it's really like 99% positive things that are going on out there. And there's so many of our colleagues, competitors that are coming from the men's game now, which is very good when they work in a good and way with high ethic and moral.
I think whilst the women's game is arguably less mature in a time sense, and it's grown quite rapidly, it's far more mature in many other ways than the men's game. And I think that it's actually got an advantage because it can learn from and avoid many of the mistakes that the men's game has made. We're trying to correct problems within men's football, whereas women's football is coming to it the clean sheet. And that's probably part of the reason why it's grown so rapidly in recent years, because it's got people looking after it and caring for it.
Yeah, definitely. And it's exactly what you say. It's not about copy paste. It's about finding like what's been doing well in the men's football. What can we take from there? But what can men's football learn from women's football in our industry, in our agent industry, but also in general? So it's and the women's football now, I would say it's been, like you said, it's been development has been like consistent the last since it was not banned anymore. But it goes fast now because the money comes in from big clubs, from big sponsors, from broadcasting deals. And when big money comes into the sport, there's always this, what way shall we take? And I think that the players and the coaches, but mainly the players, they have a huge responsibility now to actually show, like, where do we want to go with this sport?
You mentioned earlier, Maria, that a lot of new competitors or a lot of new agent firms have come into the women's football. And I know, having done some a bit of background research, ICM Stella Sports, who have got an elite women's sports division, CAA Base, see that the women's football market is quite lucrative now and have an agent or two. So there's been quite a bit of growth in the football agent space in women's football. We're seeing the current World Cup. We're seeing some great talent. We're seeing some great commercialism. We're seeing some fantastic games, and just the whole thing seems the buzz, the vibes happening. Within that context, what challenges do you see in women's football as an agent, and how have professional players in women's football, has their expectations and their demands changed? Sorry for the double-layered question, but it's all a bit interrelated.
No, but it's a great question. And I think compared to, if I would say like 10 years ago, female players were mainly just grateful. But now they are demanding. They're demanding from their clubs. They're demanding from us as an agency, which is great. And we want to put the standards and the bar like really high. And that's why also CMG as an agency, we have a team around our clients now with legal, with marketing, with tax, insurance experts, social media, because we know that the players and coaches, they are demanding that we can actually look around like the whole holistic part of the client. And I think it's just a very natural thing when a sport grows, the clients, they will also demand more. But I think where we are now, it's also that they also need to understand that with demands, there comes more pressure. And like these big sponsors will also put very high demands on the clients, like on our players and coaches. So it's not only about asking, it's also about, okay, what can I give them? So it's a give and take. And we are now in a like education phase, I would say, where it's fantastic to have high demands. That's what they shall have. But with that, it also comes a lot of things.
I'm going to ask you now a one or two word answer. I'm going to ask you this question. If you could sum up the agent world, in particular in women's football and the industry, the football agent industry, in one word, what word would that be and why?
That's a good and difficult question.
That's why we asked it.
Yeah. And I'm not prepared. The first thing that comes to my mind is development, but that's boring to say. I would say change. And change in both, like the way that like the sport is changing, but we do also not want to change it. You know, what we spoke about before, we want to keep the pureness and all the positive things with women's football. Like the latest UEFA report that came last year, the business case report has showed so many good examples of the fan base, the supporters around the women's game. So we do want change, but we do also not want to change.
You mentioned earlier, Maria, about the regulation, especially the Asian regulations, weren't suited for purpose of women's football. You're a member of the new FIFA Asian Working Group. You've had one meeting, and I know that's a lot of that's in confidence. Can you first tell us a little bit about your role in that group and had your appointment happen? And then I might just ask a question about, you know, what you want to sort of ventilate within that group, obviously as someone who's passionate about women's football and women's football agency, but just in terms of your role and how you were appointed to the FAWG or FIFA Agents Working Group.
Yeah, so we had our first meeting in Zurich in May with the Agent Working Group. And as you know, we are 18 people. I am the only one who is representing women's football, I would say. I'm the only one who's only working within women's football. So that's, of course, something that I'm very happy about, honored about. It's also a big responsibility. And for me, even if I'm working in this industry for 8 years, our sport is growing so fast. So what I felt when I met all these very inspiring people from all over the world is that I do, CMG does, and our industry, we still have a lot to learn from the industry. Yeah, I felt that I really learned a lot, but I also felt that I am able to bring into these meetings a perspective of our industry that does not even exist today. I'll just give you one example where there are articles and paragraphs in the regulations that are talking about contract stability. And that's one of four, like, cores in the new regulations. And when we speak about that during the meeting, and when we speak about these paragraphs and how agents, like, why does FIFA put into force these regulations, is because of previously or also now, like, agents, they do want to sign a player, player signs for a club. They take the whole agency fee straight upon signing, and then they want to make sure that the player changed club the next transfer window again, because the agent has already got all his money. So then there's a new transfer in 6 months, so the agent can get 100% of the money. Now the new regulations will change that. But when I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, but this is crazy. Exactly what you said before, Jonathan, about the player's care. Like, what in our business, in our agency, what we care about is our clients. What do they want to do? Like, for how long time do they want to stay in a club? So it's like we are working a lot on long-term agreements because we think that that develops the player and the women's football. So it's just a totally different perspective. And I'm not naive, but I since my last meetings now with other agents from all over the world working in this industry on the men's side, I'm just getting very surprised so many times that, like, agents are actually not working for their clients. And that's the, like, I would say the main difference between agents that do only work within women's football.
I think it's like, I've experienced that for a long, long time. Like, as an agent, I try to focus totally on player representation. Peter and I have many discussions about conflicts of interest and various aspects like that. And for me, it was always a focus on representing the players. And my approach has always been that with many clubs at a professional level, they have chief execs, they have directors of football, they have directors of finance, they now have sporting directors, they have managers who can, shall we say, fight their corner. But when it comes to a player, the player doesn't naturally have those resources, and that's where the agent's role is so important. So I think we're coming from the same angle on that, but it's great that you're in there on the AWG and presenting a voice. Just with regards to the AWG, what do you hope to achieve? I think it's been quite clear your ambitions in terms of protecting the women's game and making sure it develops in the right way. But directly from within the AWG, what do you hope the AWG will achieve? And also from your role within the AWG?
Yeah, I think, you know, and these regulations will most probably enter into force October 1st. And What I hope and really are also like aiming for is the fact that this group actually will be the voice of agents, but I think it will be difficult. I'm very sincere about that because it's an industry where there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of conflicts with FIFA as organization. But what I felt after this first meeting is that there's like the first step is always like there's a communication now. People are talking to each other. And the next step is that they also shall listen to each other. I don't think we should be naive and think that this group will just change things from one day to another. But hopefully in the long term, I hope that we will be more than one person representing the women's game in this group. But I also think that we can talk about much more things than just only the regulation, like or that is connected with that. How do we actually implement it? How do we, like the education about the regulations to clubs, to decision makers, to players and coaches? Because that for me and like also main thing, it's not only about FIFA knowing about the regulations, the agents knowing about the regulations. We also need to educate. And it's very clear for us now, especially working in a game where agents have not been present in the history, that it's a lot of new questions coming up from the decision makers in the clubs. And our clients, they need a lot of education. What is this about? Because it's so important that they know their rights, but also their demands, what they need to know about it all. So I think and hope that like it's only been one meeting. We will have the next one in the end of this year. And hopefully agents' voice will be heard.
Last couple of questions, Maria. And this is more of a statement probably than a question. In terms of the women's game, the professional football, the offering has changed. Angel City, Barcelona, Juventus, Chelsea, Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool, Bayern, Real Madrid, obviously Lyon and Wolfsburg, two big clubs as well. And I know there's a lot of Swedish clubs that are doing very well. These big names, these big clubs, these big franchises, would you ever have dreamed that this would happen? It's a very, very interesting time for women's football. But what are your thoughts? It's just all of these opportunities have arisen. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm a positive person and I've always been very, you know, it's always just been a matter of time. Also coming from a country, Sweden, that is one of the most equal countries in the world where women's football has been respected for a long time, even if we still have a long way to go. And that's why it's fantastic to see, like when Nike tells that the Matildas sold more jerseys than they've ever expected just in the first days of the World Cup. For me, it's never been like, it's a dream. No, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time when it's going to happen.
Maria, on that air of positivity, looking forward, and this will be my last question. If you had one wish for the agents industry, what would that wish be?
Oh, I would like my job would have been much. This is never going to happen. But you asked me about one.
Stay positive. You're the positive person.
No. I'm just saying because it's impossible. That it would have been so much nicer to work without the bad reputation from a men's game.
I think that's a poignant point to end on. And yes, I know. I totally agree.
But I still believe that we can change. And that's one part of our vision. Like we also want to change how people view this industry.
And hopefully the men's agents can evolve in that way. Maria, thank you so much for your time. It's been great and it's been lovely talking to you and finding out so much. And I wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Thank you very much, Peter. And good luck to you too.
What a great guest, Peter. And I have some time to reflect on the interview with Maria a bit more now, as we recorded it several days back. And safe to say, it left me upbeat and positive. And as you know, Peter, I'm more of a glass half empty person most of the time. And over the years, football has left me hating the industry and even the sport at times, even though I've loved football for many years. But listening to Maria and her views on the agency world in women's football filled me with enthusiasm, as I must say the Women's World Cup has as well. It's all very refreshing, if not an aspect of being pure and largely untarnished.
I'm quite positive as well, Jonathan. I think Maria's highlighted some key areas, and I see trends that what Maria said, but also trends that I see in the women's space really emerging. And my observations are really about, I think the FIFA agents regulations, they're going to have a big impact on women's football and also female agents in football to provide that transparency, that compliance, to provide that sort of organization. I think we will see that number of female agents growing in the sport, and I'm hoping to see that. We will also see agents who specialize in representing female players will be in more demand as women's football continues to grow and to gain popularity and commercial success. And we've seen that with huge crowds at Barcelona games. We've seen Lyon and Wolfsburg fight out the European Champions League in women's football, the Women's World Cup here, some amazing talent, and just the fans and the engagement, a different type of football to the men's. That trend's going to have a big effect, more sponsors, more broadcasters, and more clubs showing interest in the sport and really developing their women's football program. And from that, that's a launching pad for agents who represent female players, where they will have more opportunities for their players. However, just like all of us agents that we know, we've been in the space for a long time, female agents or agents working in women's football will encounter difficulties in the field. There's gender biases out there. There's access to networks. It's who you know sometimes. And obviously, there's still fewer opportunities. There's no parity in terms of the opportunities for women footballers.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And there were a couple of warning signs there from Maria's interview. The women's game, it all seems good at the moment, but there are threats as it becomes more popular, more commercialized, and arguably more lucrative. And whilst there are many good people like Maria trying their best to protect women's football and make sure it doesn't make the same mistakes in a lot of cases as the men's game.
Agree.
These people do need support. Now, in the UK recently, we've had the Carney Report released. I think it's actually entitled Raising the Bar, which is part of the so-called fan-led review into football by the UK government. Now, for anyone who cares about football, and particularly the women's game, I recommend they have a read of this report, as it is very, very good, in my opinion. Some people criticise Karen Carney, and I think it's more a blinkered snobbery and a hint of bias to her accent rather than in relation to her knowledge and insight. I actually know how she feels because she's from Birmingham, and my accent is from just down the road in the Black Country. But in my view, Karen Carney is an excellent pundit, journalist and spokeswoman for the women's game and was a superb player as well. Now, I don't recall any mention of agents in the Carney report, so maybe Maria can feed into version two on that topic in the future. This is, however, largely understandable as the subject of football agents is comparatively small when it comes to the overall issues in women's football at the moment as it grows so rapidly. But there is a worrying trend for me here when it comes to UK government reports and other reports in football, and possibly other governments and the likes of the European Commission. Is it actually all just lip service to, shall we say, the common folk who love football, and arguably just to win voters over? Whoever would have thought we accused politicians of just trying to win votes? The fan-led review, as a first point, and the associated documents gave very little mention to agent matters, approximately one page. And most of the information on that subject of agents is ill-informed. Or I suspect it could have easily been written by the likes of FIFA or the English FA themselves. The matter in the report was merely batted back to FIFA and the FA in this instance, with seemingly little or no understanding of the topic. Yet agents have been highlighted as a key problem and reason for the reforms time and time again. Two, are politicians, as I said, joining the media bandwagon with little or no knowledge and no true concern or commitment to agents' issues? And three, although the fan-led review does quite likely refer to women's football in greater depth, it is important to note that women's football in the report seemingly falls under a non-legislative area. And what sits in the non-legislative industry-led reforms is, yes, you've guessed it, agents and agent regulations. I will, however, put my soapbox away at this point. Well, at least for now. It isn't good for my health and my sanity, or for that matter, yours or anybody else's.
I just want to mention that you mentioned the Black Country. And the Black Country, for those international listeners of ours, is the part of England that's got the famous clubs of West Bromwich Albion and Wolves from Wolverhampton. I want to highlight, Jonathan, that the transfer market is maturing in women's football. There's an interesting article that basically talked about football transfers in women's professional football, and it was entitled The 5 Most Expensive Women's Football Transfers of All Time. It's from footballtransfers.com. I just want to go through some of the players who are listed here. The first one is Keira Walsh from Manchester City to Barcelona in 2022 for €470,000. Second, we had Jill Roord from VfL Wolfsburg, one of the powerhouses of women's football in Europe, to Manchester City this year for €350,000. We had Lindsay Horan from the Portland Thorns from the National League in America to Lyon, another powerhouse European club, this year as well for €300,000. And then we had Bethany England from Chelsea to Tottenham this year, and Pernell Harder from also Wolfsburg to Chelsea. That was 3 years ago, both on €290,000. And I'll just mention one more, the famous Alex Morgan, US player, national team player we saw in the recent World Cup, from Orlando prior to the San Diego Wave back in 2021 for €240,000. Now, I will say the timing of these may vary. There's the exchange rates. Obviously, these are in Europe, and this may include these sort of transfer may include bonuses or add-ons or some other contractual monetary aspects. But it just shows that the market is moving. And I will go back to 2020, where FIFA came out with some report and saying that transfer fees in women's football in 2020 was about $880,000. That's quite low. I mean, that's very low. And with about 5 transfers making 75% of that amount. So really, it's not a lot for women's professional football. I think I mentioned earlier, Keira Walsh, Manchester City to Barcelona. The highest transfer amount is €400,000. But I expect there's, and there's rumor about a big bids coming after this World Cup. As we know, we try to be very careful with the information we give to listeners. We want to see that deals have gone through or they're certain. I expect that the market will start, if not explode, but is really going to go to bigger amounts. The Women's World Cup that's on now will push that market up.
A lot of people are asking the question now, when will we see that first £1 million transfer in women's football? People still talk quite vividly about the first £1 million British player being Trevor Francis and the first £1 million player actually being Giuseppe Savoldi in the men's game. But when will we see that £1 million transfer in the women's game? It may be sooner than we think with the impact of the Women's World Cup. It may even be in the next few weeks before the window closes. I actually think it'll be more telling when there are more accurate and representative figures for player salaries and the overall transfer fees in the women's game, rather than the largely non-representative record transfers. And it is actually worth noting that, using the English Women's Super League as one example, the women's game has restrictions on salaries at the top level that the men's game doesn't really have in a lot of jurisdictions. But for now, let's not go into the topic of caps, as we know where caps leads, especially when we're referring to agents.
Yes, I think we'll be, I have a feeling that we'll be talking about caps in the not the distant future in relation to agents. Now, before I close, our next episode, I just want to give a little bit of a teaser to our listeners, is about scouts and agents working together or not, and the overlap between their offerings and services. Also, we're going to look at player recruitment, players acting without agents, and also the reliance on stats by players and agents. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Bye from me.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Take care, and we'll see you on the next episode of The Agent's Angle.
The purpose of the Agent's Angle podcast is to provide news, information and facilitate discussion on regulatory matters, policies, business trends and issues affecting football agents worldwide. The opinions and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only and should never be considered legal or professional advice. Furthermore, the views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Thank you for listening.